Now on Mitchell's Front Page, Talking Freely with Stephanie Asher.
And Stephanie Asher joins me in the studio. Good morning, Steph.
Good morning, Mitchell. How are you?
Very good, thank you. And we have to start by looking at this comment from Sandra, apropos of last week. And she says, I agreed with most of what Stephanie and Mitchell spoke of, and that's when you know there's always a but coming.
Yes.
She says, however, unless you've lived to my age, how would you know booing was the latest craze? Because last week, I think you said that booing had only been sort of a recent inclusion in the sport, and we were perhaps more tolerant in years gone by. But she says that booing has been in the culture of football for as long as I attended in the 50s until today. I've never been a fan of it, but as a youngster probably became a part of it, particularly when playing against a team that was perceived to have roughened up your favourite players, which is what I was sort of saying about Hayden Ballantyne and some of these Fremantle people that Geelong fans like to hate. So what do you think? Do you think that booing is a new thing, or is Sandra more correct?
Well, firstly, cheerio to Sandra, and thanks for making a comment. That's lovely.
Yes.
And far be it for me to argue with Sandra Cam, but I will, because I will beg to differ. And certainly, I won't dispute that her experience is her experience. But my experience, I never noticed it. So it's something that I've only noticed recently, and I don't think it used to be as prominent as it is now. And maybe, and this is controversial, isn't it? Maybe it's because I barrack for Hawthorn, but I haven't noticed it. I have noticed people do sort of tell people, say or comment that Hawthorn people boo, but they're actually usually calling out for Luke Bruce when they do that. So it isn't a boo. And I've really only noticed it recently, but obviously Sandra's had a different experience. So we hear different things, I guess.
That's right. And Sandra also mentioned in that comment, which was quite a lengthy one and we can't read out all of it, but thank you for that, Sandra, something about reverse racism. And is that perhaps an issue that we need to be aware of? What do you think about that?
I think it's a fair point and a fair question. For me, it was really the issue of, I think, speaking up, and racism is certainly as casual in this country as the sexism is. So I think for me, reverse or the full-blown version or whatever, the conversation has to be had.
And you obviously were watching the Hawthorn game on Saturday night, but any words filter to you after what happened with the Geelong game? How do you think Adam Goods was treated?
I think, look, by all accounts, as I said, I didn't go, fully commend the crowd. I've only heard good things. I'd expect nothing less from the Geelong people either. So well done to everybody. I do wonder what would have happened if Sydney thrashed the Cats, though, whether that would have been different. But I think it was a fabulous night, and well done Geelong.
People were definitely cheering a lot more when things happened, like Adam Goods got caught with the ball, when he kicked it behind, when he kicked the ball straight to a Geelong player. People were really over the top and cheering. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, and that's nice. I mean, it's good.
Yes, for Geelong. that's interesting, and I think that issue has perhaps been moved to one side now, which is a bit of a relief.
Yes, certainly the booing, hopefully that's moved to one side. I think the conversation about racism and people speaking up needs to keep going, though, so
yes.
Won't let that one go.
That's right. And the new speaker, Tony Smith, any thoughts there?
No, I think, as you said, you nailed it. It's someone who's not particularly well known, and I don't think too controversial. I notice he's chaired a parliamentary committee for a lot of years, so he's obviously got the experience and supported by everybody. So yes, as you say, let's move on.
There was a bit of talk last week about Sarah Henderson might possibly be someone that could become Speaker. I think that would have been interesting to see.
Would have been very interesting, yeah. It was interesting that there were no female candidates.
That's right, I did notice that. Mm. Hopefully now we can put that to one side and push on. But I think there's still going to be some talk about the expenses. I don't know what you think about that and what's happened with Tony Burke and all that.
I think the deeper that we scratch here, the more that we'll find. And I agree, there's outrageous double standards, but I don't think any one political side is worse than any other. It's simply the culture of politics. And it's actually pitched as part of the benefit of being a politician. Mm. In my experience, I think as part of the trade-off for sort of losing your privacy and opening yourself up to public criticism and sort of being on 24/7. So in that context, I suppose some financial perks are probably fair enough. Reimbursement of out-of-pocket expenses is totally fair enough, but I think they just need to be justified, and it's probably fair to say they've become a bit bloated, as have some of our pollies.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to put this to one side and then have to come back to it again in about 3 or 4 years' time and go through it all over again. When the government got first elected and was first sworn in, there was this whole raft of expenses talk then, and that they'd gone to, I think, Sophie Mirabella's wedding or something, and then it died down. down and it's picked up again. So I don't really want to talk about it anymore. I think we have to fix the system once and fix it properly.
That's right, and it's about having a clearer set of rules, isn't it? We really do need to. I mean, rorting comes back to that whole accepted culture, that insidious set of behaviours that becomes okay because everyone else is doing it. I mean, we humans are pretty smart. We can rationalise anything after a while, but it's rife in the trades with materials. It's in cash businesses. It's in the corporate world with credit cards. The pollies are no different to every other Australian, I don't think.
But what about, for example, what happened with Tony Burke flying first class with his staffer and then partner to Europe? He says that's well and truly within the rules, and I'm sure it is, but he says that it's outside of community expectations. So there's a difference there. Should the rules reflect community expectations?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, from a business perspective, you need to picture the situation of sitting with an auditor to check what's being claimed is reasonable. You know, it is that reasonable man in the street test. So I think that should apply across the board, but it does need to be clear. If people are going to push a boundary, then make sure that the boundaries are fairly firm.
And Greens leader Richard Di Natale says that an independent umpire might be the answer. What do you think about that?
Oh, look, I'm not so sure about that one. Harold Mitchell wrote a really funny article, actually, I think it was whichever paper on the weekend, about capping the personal expenses. Just cap it. So here you go, there's $20,000 and don't ask for any more and that's it and we don't care how you use it. And I thought that was another interesting one. He was relating it back to, you know, ad industry days and the excesses. So, yeah, there's probably a few different solutions.
That might encourage them to spend more than they need there.
True, but that's, I suppose, you then have the situation where what if they need more than that? And that's justifiable too. So, you know, everything's going to be debated.
That's
just
right.
A clear set of rules.
But I think the independent umpire, you can't actually vote for them. So how do you know that they're going to represent community standards? Whereas if a member of parliament does something you don't like, you can vote them out at the next election.
That's right, yes. And how are we defining independent in that context? I mean, who'd want that position?
And parliament back today, of course, with the new speaker now. What do you think is going to happen? We've got this news poll out, which is 54-46, dire times. What does the government need to do over the next two sitting weeks?
Look, I really think we need to get back to some clear policy discussion. I think people are really tired of
We're crying out for it.
Yeah, that's right. And I think, you know, renewable energy is obviously a huge topic that needs thrashing out. That's a big popular discussion. If we can get away from all the nonsense and even stop focusing on the numbers. I mean, targets are necessary, but I think the conversation needs to be around the long-term plan for the country. You know, what is our vision for energy for the next 100 years? Are we actually going to lead and be innovative and use our advanced manufacturing skills like we all say that Australia does? Or are we going to keep blundering around burning coal forever and arguing about whether that's a good idea or not? I mean, this needs to have a little bit of common sense, a bit of sensible discussion. It recognises different philosophies about the environment, about science, about the need for financial backing, you know, the appreciating impact on labour forces of changing traditional methods, all those sorts of things. We need to really focus on walking our talk, and I just don't think Australia's being real smart now. We talk about how smart we are, but we're not being smart.
Well, the debate is a really difficult one at the moment, because it gets hijacked so often by different sides. You know, both sides have interests, obviously. Some people have investments in green as well, so it's not just one side. But there's so much misleading information out there. But Libby Coker is going to be joining us next week in the studio, and that's something I want to talk to her about, because that's been something that they want to sort of differentiate themselves from the government with. And this very bold plan of 50-50, where you're going to have 50% renewable, 50% from non-renewable sources. I don't know if that is actually possible, but I want to talk to her perhaps more about the implementation about that and what it's actually going to look like.
That's exactly right, and that's what I'm interested in too. It's very easy to throw these numbers around, but I want to see and hear what are they talking about? How are you going to do that?
Yep, absolutely right. So that's one area. Same-sex marriage is another one, and we saw a display at Canberra Airport, I think, yesterday in relation to that. What do you think is going to happen there?
I really don't know, and it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because I'm never sure whether it is the big majority discussion or whether it is a very noisy minority with this one. Personally, I think conscience vote. You know, I really do think it's an individual thing. It's really important, but it's a lot more important to some people than it is to others. So for me, the refugee treatment is the one. You know, that's something that needs a lot more clarity and discussion. The turnbacks policy needs to be better explained now that, you know, positions have changed. We need to that really somebody has to address what's going on in the detention centres. And by address, I mean clearly shine the light on what's happening, whether that's good, bad or indifferent. We need to communicate weaknesses and the challenges and a plan for solutions. You know, we need to lose this fear of being open that we're hearing at the moment from our pollies. For the Libs, the way the polls are going, they can well afford to take a risk with honesty, I think.
Well, Labor says that if they were in control, they wouldn't be saying things like, we're not going to talk about that because it's operational matters.
Yeah, well, we need more clarity, and we need to recognise that conversations are going to get hijacked. We need to push through this, you know, sort of media tossing around the sort of the polarising aspects of it. That's the reality. We have a 24-hour news cycle, so manage it.
Now, what is an autarky? You wanted to talk about this week.
Yeah, now this was interesting because it came up. I was reading an article in The Australian, Melbourne Mining Club lunch that Alberto Calderon, who's now the head of Orica, he was at BHP Billiton when I was there as a group management committee member, and he was talking about, the thrust of the headline that got my attention was that coal and iron ore prices will slump and it'll last a decade. So it's like, wow, decade. Not just a small slump. But he was talking about India and Indian electricity demand. And one of the comments he made is, knowing the Indians, they'll try and be autarkic. Mm-hmm. They have it in their DNA. And I thought, I don't even know what that means. So, according to the Gospel of Wikipedia, self-sufficiency is the short answer. And it's the quality of being self-sufficient. So it's usually applied to political states. And it exists when an entity can survive or continue without external assistance or international trade. Now, that's not to say that it's refusing trade. That's a closed economy. But the autarky being self-sufficient. And it got my attention because that really describes what I think the Geelong region can be. And that's what I've always thought. We've got all elements in this region, from food bowls to renewable energy positioning in sense of wind turbines, tidal turbines, all manner of sorts of things that we could make things happen here to be self-sufficient. We've got the people, we've got the big city, we've got the rural and the regional scope. And I just thought that's a really interesting word and I might start using it more because I'm a big one for self-sufficiency and I think it's a ripper for Geelong.
I would like us to be self-sufficient in terms of creating jobs, and that means relying less on big corporations being here, maybe looking at how we can help small business, for example.
Absolutely, yeah, and all of the above. There might be a few big corporations. I prefer to rely less on funding and welfare dependency. You know, that idea of having all big public service institutions here, that's something that I think gives Geelong a certain flavour that we can move away from. And I would welcome more big corporates here, but as you say, small businesses, there's a lot of them. I think the mix, the diversity is what we've got, and that's our beauty here.
Yes. Now, what's happening in Drysdale? You've got a bit of a plug.
Drysdale, I definitely do have a plug. This has come from a couple of friends of mine, actually, one of whom is the Drysdale Voice, the Ocean Grove and Drysdale Voice is the local newspaper there. And there's basically the council has promised to match the state government funding, $3.5 million for their sports precinct, which includes a multi-purpose oval and a premier sports oval. They've got soccer, football and cricket that all need desperately need sporting facilities. And the council hasn't put the $3.5 million in the next budget. So, and also there's a situation where they've scaled down what they think should be done to one multi-purpose oval. So the community's rejected the idea of one multi-purpose oval. They're pushing the council to budget, put the money up or chase the state government harder for theirs, and the council's basically said, well, we will put it in the next budget. The community is not really trusting that. And they have rejected the idea of one multi-purpose oval because that would mean soccer and football have to fight over who uses it on the weekends. So there is a community forum on Wednesday night in Drysdale, 7:30 Wednesday night at the Drysdale Primary School Hall.
Okay, and people should attend if that's a particular issue of concern for them.
Indeed, and I've spoken to one of the councillors about it, and they're very happy to have a chat, and they said it's all good, and something's going to council in the next 4 to 6 weeks, I believe. So if you want to get the real story and know what's happening and put your voice forward, go along Wednesday night, 7:30, Drysdale Primary School Hall.
And last of all, should we link school funding to NAPLAN results?
No.
What do you think?
Short answer for me is no. NAPLAN's a fairly limited academic measure of performance, I'd say, and I don't think funding should be based on that because educating kids is about more than that. But also, surely that provides an incentive to focus too heavily on NAPLAN. It's already enough of a distraction in the curriculum. And I'm thinking, well, hang on, does that mean good NAPLAN performers get the money? Surely they're the schools that don't need it. So if you reversed it and said, well, the schools that don't do well, they get the money, then everybody's then incentivized.
It's a race to the bottom.
Yeah, that's right. Race is incentivized. I hate that word as a verb, but yeah. I'm appalled.
Yeah, well, I was looking at that article. I thought exactly the same thing. Would you give it as a reward or to help those schools that need need it most, and I think that's exactly right.
Yes.
So I think that's probably a fair point. But also this idea that you just throw money at the problem and it'll go away. Well, no, I think you have to actually look at it more deeply to find out, well, why are the NAPLAN results below average?
Yeah, it's absolutely not just money, right. And I'm definitely not in the know about how schools actually currently operate and get their funding, but surely they should be funded according to the needs that are articulated through a well-constructed case, and then the claim would be validated by visits, site visits, interviews, conversations, and actually what's your problem here.
Well said. Well, thank you so much for joining me. Really appreciate it. We'll talk to you next Monday.
Look forward to it.
Thank you very much, Stephanie Asher there.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.